the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site. This is episode 365, and we are back to a normal set of shows as training camp will start next week. This is not our training camp preview, but Seth Cox is back on the show. He had a nice little bit of time off between, you know, coaching his kids' sports teams and vacations, and then I took the time to do the opponent preview. So we've had the opponent previews for the last 3 weeks. So Seth, welcome back. It's been a while, but we're here. We've officially hit the part where we are almost weekly again.
Yeah, Rodney Hudson and I took the same break, and now we get to come back at the same time and put in. Hopefully his effort's going to be better than mine.
So that's what we're going to start. This is what episode 365. What we're going to do. What we'll normally start with. This is our NFC West rankings show, and we're going to get to that. But we want to talk first because the big news of the last week, or honestly the last month, is the fact that just came this week. Rodney Hudson, who was absent from the entire offseason program, there were not like big reports, but there were small reports of inside that he was done, that either he was retiring or just didn't want to be on the Cardinals anymore. But after leaving the Cardinals in a bit of a lurch, because, you know, when you're trying out Justin Pugh at center, or converting a sixth round rookie to center to potentially be the guy to replace him, he informed the team on Monday that he would report to camp next week and will play in 2022, which is a huge sigh of relief. Because let's be honest, now there's really only one question now about the Cardinals on offense, and that is how they produce without DeAndre Hopkins. The offensive line is 4/5 the same as it was last year. You get Will Hernandez, who they believe is an upgrade over Max Garcia / Josh Jones. And so I guess you could say the right guard is a minor question mark. But other than that, the Cardinals are set on offense, and it's just how do they weather this 6-game suspension? Because I think Hudson back in there, that solidifies, and as we look at when we rank the offensive lines, the Cardinals have the fewest number of questions about their offensive line in the entire division.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the nice thing about it. You know, they've done a good job. And you know, I wrote about it today on Revenge of the Birds, so we're recording on July 19th. And so it's really interesting because I actually wrote about it today. I said, hey, you know, they like the depth that they have on their offensive line. I was fortunate enough, and never did it in an odd way, to talk to Sean Coogler a couple times. Our sons played baseball against each other, and you know, they were extremely excited about both Marquise Hayes and Lasitas Smith and the picks. And so, you know, the only thing that made him light up even more was when he got to talk about Will Hernandez and being back with him. But, you know, it's just interesting because I think fans look at it and go, well, all they did was add Will Hernandez, and that makes them go, well, and he sucked for the Giants. So this is just a terrible offensive line. It's like, no, it's not how it works. You know, a lot of the issues last year can be traced back to a couple things. One, think about the first 4 games of the season. I mean, that was as dominant of an offensive performance as we've seen from anybody in the NFL. And a lot of it was just how good the running game was, right? And that was when Rodney Hudson was healthy. And then he has the rib fracture. Was there a fracture or dislocation? It was something crazy. It wasn't like
just a rib injury of some sort. It was probably a cracked rib. So he dealt with injuries.
And
then there was COVID.
Right. Then he comes back and like for a game and then he's got COVID and he just didn't look healthy when he came back after COVID. Like he just looked lethargic. He looked like he had nothing left to give. And so maybe that prompted the retirement talk. Like, do I have any, do I have it left? You know, like, I mean, it's tough, man. It's really tough for guys to play as long as he has in the, you know, in the middle of an interior offensive line against guys that, I mean, think about the guys he was playing against, Dontari Poe, right? Like, you know, the great Denver pass rushing duo that they had during the Peyton Manning run, you know, on the interior there. I can't remember their names off the top of my head. Like he's had to go against Joey Bosa for the last couple of years. And then he comes over here and he just has to play against the, you know, one of the 10 best defensive linemen in NFL history in Aaron Donald. Like this dude has not had it easy by any means. And so sometimes, you know, you have that question. And if he is coming back and he's saying, no, I'm in and I'm ready to go, there's not a center that they could realistically acquire at this moment that would be better.
Absolutely. And you know, whether it was legitimate retirement talk, whether it was simply he's at the stage in his career at 33 years old and a young family that he just didn't want to do the off-season program. He is a team leader. He was probably one of the guys last year when the NFLPA was encouraging players to stay home. I'm sure he was the one of them that pushed the Cardinals to cut from 3 weeks to OTAs and 1 week of minicamp to only 1 week of OTAs and then minicamp having instead of 4 weeks in a row to just do 2 weeks. He was probably part of that. It's kind of interesting. And I got a little bit of insight, and I can't remember if you listen to the opponent previews, the first one that we did was, well, the second one show that we did was the AFC West preview, the first two games, the Chiefs and the Raiders. And when I talked to Marcus Mosher from Raiders Wire, I asked him about how, I can't remember if I did it before we started recording or after, and he gave the insight is one of the reasons why the Raiders were really willing to trade him is that even after the 2020 season, there was questions. They had questions about whether he was ahead of the game. And so it's interesting to see that even a year later, he played well. Obviously, down the stretch, it wasn't as good. But getting him back in, that just – it. The big question on offense, they've gone all in on offense. Let's say this. They've gone all in on offense, and to have that important piece not be there, that is so much better.
It really is. And so, you know, you look at it, he's just such an important piece, and he really just makes the offensive line better as a whole, you know, and so that's the way you have to look at it. And, you know, let's hope that he stays healthy and can produce in maybe his final season as a pro.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seabird podcast, the best of Cardinals talk of the web, we're going to get started with our NFC West rankings. We're going to talk about the quarterback positions and the running back positions. We'll be looking at over this show. We're talking about ranking the top guys, the individuals at each position in the division, and then the position unit. So that's coming next on Rise Up Seabird. We're back on the Rise Up Seabird podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, as we now are at the point where we are going to rank the players and positions in the NFC West, something we've done each of the last several years in the series I'm beginning to do on CardsWire.com. But let's start with the quarterback position, and it was interesting because last year I had both Matthew Stafford and Kyler Murray as kind of 1A, 1B. Who for you this offseason, who is your number one quarterback entering this year? Is it Stafford or is it Murray?
Yeah, I think you have to give the edge to Stafford still. Obviously, his age is becoming an issue at this point, but you know, what he did last year, what he was able to accomplish, I think that's, I think it's only fair that, that you give him the nod for right now. And then you kind of, and you kind of, knowing that at any time, these quarterbacks that when they hit that 32 and it's gotten better. I mean, obviously, but when they get up in that 34, 35 range, like the cliff is usually pretty steep, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so you just look at it and you wait and see where he's going to fall. But, you know, you look at his last four games, you know, obviously including the Super Bowl, you know, he went for 202 yards and two touchdowns against the Cardinals, 366 yards and two touchdowns against the Bucks, 337 yards and two touchdowns with one pick against the 49ers, and then 283 yards, three touchdowns, two interceptions against the Bengals. I mean, just under 1,200 yards, nine touchdowns, three interceptions just in the playoffs. So the dude finished on, you know, regular season and postseason combined 50 touchdowns, 20 interceptions. He's still a high variance player, and I don't think anybody can deny that. But
like, you put him on a team, he had, though, granted, he had his most passing yards and touchdown passes that he's had in nearly in over 5 years. He was less variant last year than what we've seen him before. Obviously, like even the great ones, they'll have some bad stuff. We saw in the Cardinals' first game against him that he could be rattled a little bit. But to walk in into that system year one and do what he did, I forgot. I already forgot about him. Obviously, Kyler and Stafford weren't tied for number one. That was Russell Wilson. He's been the number one quarterback in the NFC West for years, but he's not in the NFC West anymore since the Seattle Seahawks felt that, you know, they were done with him. So, yeah, I also have Stafford ranked number one over Murray just a little bit. You have to give Stafford the credit because I think last year when we did the show and we talked about them is that we gave – it was either a slight edge or no edge to Stafford because – he'd played on those bad teams for so long and hadn't elevated those teams. And, you know, we saw what Stafford could be. He's reminded many people, like to me, his career looked like Carson Palmer's before he got to the Cardinals. And honestly, kind of looked like Carson Palmer after he came to the Cardinals in LA, only had a bad team around him. That sort of impact I felt that he was going to have. And so it showed that not only like, given the supporting cast, had he not been languishing in Detroit, he might have been a top five quarterback this entire time.
Yeah, and so I think giving him the number one spot's only fair. You know, and then you have Kyler Murray as number two, and I don't think really there's a question there. The question becomes, you know, can Kyler put together 18 game or 17 game season and overtake Matthew Stafford this year or next year? You know, like Murray's, is he just 25 now? Is he even 25 now? I'm not sure.
I think he's about to turn 25. I think he turns 25 next month.
Okay. Yeah, I can pull it up. Yeah, he turns 25 in like 3 weeks. So that's the thing is you got a guy going on the wrong side of 35 and a guy going on the wrong side of 25, which again goes back to what Jess and I have been talking about for so long. You can have a similar player production wise over the next 9 years in Kyler Murray, and people are like, yeah, let's just, you know, not sign him. So but anyways, yeah, so I mean Kyler's number two. I think the longevity of Stafford is something that's going to be, you know, discussed as we go along. Like, is this a guy that becomes a Hall of Famer at this point? Like, that's actually a legitimate question with, yeah, like you said, like the volume numbers he put up while he was in Detroit were absurd, but he never really had anything to go with it. And now he put up really nice volume numbers and was able to, you know, get the ring. So does he need to do it for another 2 years? I don't know. I think probably from a volume standpoint, he's at the place in his career where you can, you know, you look at it and you say he's a Hall of Famer, but we'll see.
I think he probably needs two more years of playoff and still playing at a high level to really cement himself. Otherwise, it's still slightly better than Carson Palmer, because Carson Palmer also has the numbers statistically that say he'd be a Hall of Famer. But I'm not gonna say Carson Palmer by any means is a Hall of Famer. He was one of the most talented quarterbacks we've ever seen, who had an above average career.
Right, and you know, and like you said, it's gonna be close because Stafford's about 8,000 yards, so about two seasons. So that's a fair, you know, he's about 8,000 yards away from being top 10 all time in passing yards. You know, that's going to make him one of those guys that you look at. He's 39 touchdowns away from getting into the top 10 in passing touchdowns. So, I mean, those are numbers that are just, and like, and now you've got a guy that's, you know, won a Super Bowl, so,
and had an MVP type season. Here's the question though: who's number three in the division after?
Yeah, I was gonna ask you the same thing. I mean, you have,
I still have Jimmy Garoppolo. I think right. He's the third best quarterback in the division, and he's going to get shipped out of the town. So as of right now, as of Tuesday night, he's still on the team, and he'll get traded at some point. But there, you know, the 49ers are moving on from, it looked like, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the division. He wasn't the best. Russell Wilson was the best. Heck, Stafford might have passed him up with the way he played, but they are passing on Jimmy Garoppolo. They're moving on from him for Trey Lance. That they're very, very, that's very promising. But let's not, Garoppolo is still the third best quarterback in this division.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement to make. And, you know, it just, you know, you look at it. This is a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. I mean, obviously there were I can't even remember the Jaquiski Tart dropped interception away from going to the Super Bowl. But at the same time, you look at it, he's, you know, he probably gives them the best chance to win still, and they may even take a step back this year going to Trey. But at the same time,
when you trade three first round picks, you have to move on for you to him. You have to.
Well, you have to move on to him, but you've also seen that the ceiling with Jimmy is heartbreak. I don't know.
Yeah, it's exactly as Kyle Madsen, when we did the opponent preview, is like, you've seen what they can do with Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's not quite enough. He's very good.
Right.
Not good enough.
But so, like, you put Jimmy on, I mean, I know, like, the Panthers just traded for Baker Mayfield, but, like, you put Jimmy on the Panthers, and, like, you feel like they're the second best team immediately in the NFC South, right? Or if you put him on the Saints, or, you know, anything like that. Like, if Deshaun Watson ends up getting suspended for the year, and obviously the Browns have nothing to trade, but and you're the Browns and you trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, you feel like you're still a playoff contender. The difference is you have to see if Trey Lance gets you to be a Super Bowl winning team as opposed to a Super Bowl losing team. Now, as Cardinals fans, we don't understand this.
We never had to deal with this.
And quite frankly, like, that's the thing, is like, if you put Stafford or Murray on the 49ers, they probably win a Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
But so, like, that's how you have to go about it. Would you put Geno in front of Trey Lance at this point?
I did not. Heck, here's the thing. And when I did my rankings the other day, I put Trey Lance next, and I actually put Colt McCoy ahead of Geno. I think Colt has a higher ceiling. I think in terms of Colt and Geno, I think they are basically equals, only Colt gives you a higher ceiling. And Geno, at this point is the play it safe guy. Like he's perfect. He's basically perfect for Pete Carroll this year. But we saw Geno in action, and if he had to put his team on his shoulder, it was sadness for Seattle. But yeah, I think Trey Lance's, he showed enough, he flashed enough later last year to think that I think he's better, maybe not right now, but will be this year better than what Colt or Geno would be.
Yeah, and I think so, but like when you look at it, it's funny because we're going to do this next, but like when you look at quarterback situations and rooms, right? And you know, I guess we're moving on to that anyways because we talked about the starters. Like when you look at the when you look at the room, you look at it and you say the Cardinals probably have the best room.
Right. Right, because they've got the number 2 quarterback and the number 5 quarterback. San Francisco, right now, I think has the best quarterback room.
But here's what's funny. From a room standpoint, obviously the Rams have the best quarterback. Smith and Locke aren't, I mean, that at least, like, but it's the old, like, when you have two backups, you know, you don't have any starters or whatever that, you know.
That's Derek Anderson and Max Hall.
Right. It's just like, it's like two guys that are fine backups, but when you have, you know, or what is it? When you have two starters, you have no starters. Like that's kind of what their situation is. Like if Smith is your backup, like if Smith was the backup for Kyler, I think everybody's like, hey, this is not a bad situation. Right.
Yeah.
You know, if Drew Locke is the backup for Matthew Stafford, you're like, that's a good situation. But like when they're the two options to start, you're like, oh my gosh.
Well, cause like Geno, he like you're limited. You're limited of what you're going to be do offensively. And then on the other hand, you've got Drew Locke who is reckless. He's got a Matthew. He's got a Josh Allen arm without the Josh Allen performance because he's Josh Allen and Daniel Jones all together in one.
Right. Right. And so, you know, you look at it, this is just, you know, you look at it, I think, I mean, you're probably right. You probably have to give like the room edge right now to the 49ers just because
until they trade like, Jimmy and then it won't matter.
Right. But cause they have the third and fourth guy, but when you have 2 and 5 and like you in those positional, the depth chart is set. I think, you know, I think the Cardinals in the end have the best room. Like obviously if Trey Lance went down and Jimmy stepped in, like you'd be like, oh, there's nothing wrong. Whereas like if Murray went down for more than 3 games, you're like, oh, this is going to be a long season.
Well, right. We saw the good and the bad of Colt McCoy is that if you stay on, like if you stay on schedule offensively, Colt's just fine. Don't ask Colt to try and bring you back like that Carolina
right.
game.
We saw the Carolina game. Right. Exactly. And then, you know, I mean, you're going to put the Rams ahead of the Seahawks just because they have the best quarterback in the division.
Right.
But I mean, I still go back to it. Like if John Wolford ends up playing any meaningful snaps in a season, like you've got to feel like you've got a great chance to win the division if it's the Cardinals or the 49ers.
Yeah, totally. And then Seattle, I mean, what are they doing?
Nobody knows, man. Nobody knows what
like Pete Carroll is. That's the thing. I see that Seahawks are going to be good enough. Like, I don't think they're going to be, I think they're going to be a bad team, but I don't think they're going to be awful record wise. And so they're not even like tanking, right? So like if Pete Carroll wants to get himself a good quarterback, like he thinks he can be competitive with Geno, and that with Geno and or Drew Locke, what they're going to end up being is a 5 or 6 win team.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like I'm shocked they didn't go after Mayfield. A buddy of mine keeps talking about like, do you think the 49ers would trade Garoppolo? I can't see that because that would help them too much. So yeah, you look at it like it's just, I mean, yeah, it's a bad depth chart, man.
All right, let's talk about the running backs. Let's do top five individual running backs. And this is an interesting fact, is that there was not a 1,000-yard rusher last season in the NFC West. I'm not saying that they did, that it's a bad running back. It's not because of talent. It's because durability was a major problem. Chris Carson, who in terms of what we've seen over the last few years, one of the best backs in the league. That neck injury might have him done. Rashad Penny played fantastically down the stretch, but Rashad Penny's been one injury after another. He finally put together a nice stretch last season. Elijah Mitchell was the closest to 1,000 yards, sixth-round pick last year for the 49ers. He had over 900 yards. He had injuries. James Conner and Chase Edmonds both missed games last season. But let's do top five backs in the division. For you, who's the number one?
I think right now it's Cam Akers. You know, he put on a performance throughout the playoffs that was just, you know, really impressive. And you know, you and I both really liked him coming out of Florida State, thought he could be a good fit for the Cardinals, just didn't work out.
Yeah, I would have put him if he hadn't just played the one regular season game. I actually put Elijah Mitchell. I put Elijah Mitchell in the as the number one spot, and I think I had Cam Akers. Where did I put Akers? Interestingly enough, I actually put Akers at number four. I think talent wise, he's a higher than that. But for me, honestly, I felt like one through four did not separate much.
Yeah, and so I'm going with upside. You know, number two, I would put God, so it is tough. I'd probably put Elijah Mitchell. You know, he had a good season last year, finished with 4.7 yards per carry, you know, five touchdowns. His postseason is what concerned me. Like, whereas Cam, you know, amped up in the postseason. You know, I just don't know.
His case, it's just that the 49ers are doomed at running backs. They find day three / undrafted guys that will be fantastic, but will be only be durable for about 10 games and then injury sick. It is just how they do things. And then the guy that they draft in Trey Sermon, who looks like he's the perfect workhorse to finally give Kyle Shanahan, and he just doesn't play him. I don't know if it was like pass protection, it was the issue or whatever, but Elijah Mitchell kept all the pipes. So here's my top five. I go Elijah Mitchell number one. I go Rashad Penny number two. Although Penny,
I was gonna say if Penny,
oh my gosh, if Penny does what he did. Because he led the NFL in yards per carry at 6.3. He had 135 yards or more in four of his final five games of the season. Now, if that's the version of what we're getting from Rashad Penny from here on out, he's the best running back in the division. And we loved him coming out of college. We will admit that. We both loved him coming
out
of college.
But, like, that's the thing is, like, I mean, I think both of us are like hedging this because we both would put Penny at number one, but, like, that was such an ungodly run. Right, like, there's no way he can do that for 17 games. I mean, he's never even been healthy.
Right, so that's the thing. He's been one injury after another.
Right, so you just look at it like
we saw. I saw it, but I can't put him at number one because he's got to put together. He's got to put together a full season.
Something, yeah. Something.
I had James Conner number three, and then I had Cam Akers number four, and I put number five is Darrell Williams. Because, like, he was one of, like, seven running backs in the entire league to have 1,000 total yards. There's nothing – Darrell Williams does nothing spectacularly. Not a thing. He's not a dynamic runner. He's not particularly speedy. He's not a dynamic pass catcher. But what he does do is everything pretty well.
Well, and you look at it like, all right, so you have Seattle. Like you said, Chris Carson, we don't even know if he's going to be healthy. I think both you and I love Kenneth Walker III, but we also, I mean, like, what type of run is he going to get outside of Rashad Penny's health? The Seahawks don't really rotate very much, right? Like, they'll use a guy up.
Yeah.
you know, San Francisco, they're number two, and I guess we should have like kind of at least said something. We're using what ESPN has as depth chart right now. So like, you know, if you have a beef with who we say is the second string guy, don't bring it up with us. But like, so you have Elijah Mitchell at one, you talked about Trey Sermon, right? But they've got,
it's Jeff Wilson is actually their number two guy.
Right. And they've got Tyrion Davis Price.
I don't even know who that is, but no, Jeff Wilson is their number
two. They just drafted, you know, and then you have Daryl Henderson, who's just been kind of a guy, right?
Like two straight years of over 600 yards. Solid, but not special.
But they're also always looking to replace him.
Yes, they are.
And then they brought in Kyren Williams, who like
is, immediately got hurt.
Well, and he is 1,000% the guy that like he's got to defy all the odds because like he didn't test well. He's undersized. Like everything about him screams like he's not going to be a good running back, but he ended up in a great system. So we'll see. So, you know, you look at it like, I, you know, looking at it now, I would go Akers, Penny, Connor, and then I would go Elijah Mitchell. I think Elijah Mitchell is really good. I just, is it, the, like you said, the system makes all of them so replaceable.
Yeah.
That, like, I have a hard time. And then, like you said, Daryl Williams, five, makes sense right now. And that would mean, like, when you look at running back rooms, I think the Cardinals is the best room.
I do. I have them ranked number one. If I'm looking at a trio, James Conner, Daryl Williams, Eno Benjamin, I have them at the top. Well, here's the thing. James Conner and Daryl Williams both were 1,000-yard players last year, and I'm going to buy a little bit into the hype of Eno Benjamin because he has been the talk of the offseason for the Cardinals. So it's the way things stand right here in terms of health and production. That's a really good group. I do put San Francisco next, in which you got Elijah Mitchell, Jeff Wilson, Trey Sermon. Jeff Wilson was, well, he's single-handedly beaten the Cardinals twice, but had that weird foot injury in OTAs and then only played in a handful of games. But he's, yeah, the San Francisco situation with running backs is always good because their run scheme is amazing.
Which means for fantasy, just pick up that Davis Price kid or Price Davis kid because he'll be the one that ends up getting 900 yards right. and six touchdowns.
Trey Sermon somehow won't do it. And then I put the Rams ahead of the Seahawks just because.
Obviously the injury concerns between Penny and Carson. And then, I mean, as much as we love Kenneth Walker and we expect him to be very good, You have to look at the fact that he still is a rookie. Like, and he's playing behind a terrible offensive line.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. Coming next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to the pass catchers, receivers, tight ends. That's coming next on Rise Up Spirit. We're back on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the wide receivers individually. We'll just go top five receivers in the division. And then who has the best wide receiver room? In terms of talent, I would love to put DeAndre Hopkins number one. I want to. But after the season that Cooper Kupp had last year, I just can't. One, Hopkins is injured. He's going to be suspended the first six games of this year. He's now 30 years old. I put Cooper Kupp at the top, followed by Hop. Do you do anything different?
No. I think Cooper Kupp's one. I think you can make a lot of arguments about number two. And I think we as Cardinals fans will lean on Hop as number two. But then, I mean, it just gets so dicey, right? So you've got Coop, right, as one, and, you know, maybe say number one with a bullet. I don't know. But he's the number one guy. From there, the number two guy, you say, okay, let's say Hopkins. And here's the thing. You have DK Metcalf, right, and you have Deebo Samuel, the top two guys for the Seahawks and the 49ers. And now we're going to see what DK is made of, because he's not going to catch passes from a future Hall of Famer now.
Correct.
You know, and
And he played banged up all last year. Like, after his amazing 2020, last year was very ordinary.
Right. Well, and one of the things that we've talked about with, like, obviously watching Fitz for so long and then getting Hopkins here is that they were virtually quarterback proof, right?
Like, yeah.
Fitz put up numbers with a cavalcade of nobodies. DeAndre did the same thing, right? I mean, DeAndre Hopkins was a 3-time All-Pro, and I think when he had Matt Schaub. Right, like, so you look at it, that's just who he is. He's a dude, right? And so, and then you go to the Debo situation, and this is a similar conversation to the running back. Is Debo's value held in only San Francisco, or is he a guy that you can put on in any system and he's going to have the same type of success? And so that's the thing. So, like, when you look at it, people are going to say, well, you guys are being homers. Maybe we are. I love Debo Samuel. I love his game. But, like, if you put him in Miami instead of Tyreek Hill, like, are we as excited?
No, because, well, here's the thing. Because Jalen Waddle is their Debo, and they needed to add Tyreek.
Right. And so you just look at it, like, I just think that there are, I would probably put Debo in front of DK, even though DK is more of a pure receiver.
I do as well. In fact, my top five, I go Kupp, Hopkins, Debo, DK, and I actually put, maybe it's the homer, Hollywood. I put Hollywood Brown at number five ahead of Brandon Ayuk and Tyler Lockett and Allen Robinson.
I would put, it's so hard, man, because from a pure perspective, I would probably put Lockett there right now. And here's why I say that. One, because he's had so much success, and two, he's, you know, done it for so long. But I wouldn't put Ayuk in the argument. Allen Robinson's a very good player, but, like, he's been injured and ineffective, right?
Yes.
And so I want to see him. So I would put Allen Robinson and Marquise Brown in the same boat. Both incredibly talented. Both have had big, productive seasons, more so than Brandon Ayuk. But I want to see how they flourish in their new system before I go and just, like, chalk it up. And so, like, that's the thing, is, like, last year Allen Robinson kind of looked cooked, but let's be honest, he played for the Bears and he was probably dogging it a lot. You know, so you just look at it from that perspective and you say, okay, what do you make of this? So, you know, when you look at it, I'm going to give it to Lockett, and then I would put like it, like, 5A, and then Hollywood 5B, and then, you know, Allen Robinson 5C. And then I think it's going to separate, because this will be the first time Lockett doesn't have Russell Wilson.
Right, right. Now we look at the room. So let's look at what should be the top three pass catchers for each team. For the Cardinals, you've got Hopkins, Hollywood, and A.J. Green. But for the first six games, it'll be Hollywood, A.J. Green, and Rondale Moore. We can kind of look at that. Then for San Francisco, you got Debo, Brandon Ayuk, and probably Juwan Jennings as the third receiver. Seattle, you've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Freddie Swain is probably the number three. And the Rams, you've got, until they sign Odell Beckham, which seems like it's probably going to happen, you've got Cooper Kupp, Allen Robinson, and Van Jefferson, but that might end up being Odell Beckham. And if they do add Odell Beckham, I think they are the number one receiver room in terms of top three. Right now, if we're looking at the first of the season, like if we're looking at the Hopkins, AJ, Hollywood, I like the Cardinals trio best. And if, for me, I think I put Hollywood, AJ, so I'm going to take the Rams trio over the Cardinals trio, sans Hopkins, but you add Hopkins and you add Odell to the Rams, and I would put the Rams just ahead of the Cardinals once Odell is back and Hopkins is back. So I give the Cardinals the overall edge of the Rams as constituted now.
Do you think Odell goes back?
I do. It seems to it has that feeling. It kind of has that vibe. It's kind of been the whole way. It kind of feels like he's going to go back to the Rams.
Isn't it crazy that you look at the Seahawks and you go, golly, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, and then Freddie Swain's your three. And then you do the same thing with like
49ers. And the 49ers. I don't know what to do with the 49ers and Seahawks, because they're both their 1-2s. Like their 1-2s, I think, are on par with one. They're probably pretty equal.
Right. I 100% agree. I mean,
Juwan Jennings and Freddie Swain, does it really matter?
Right. So, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about rooms and not, you know, individual players. And so when you look at the room,
and so based on this, since it's quarterback play, I'm probably going to put 49ers over the Seahawks. Probably, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. And because I just don't trust Geno and
Drew Lock.
Andrew Lock, yeah. So
let's look at tight ends. Individuals. I mean, obviously George Kittle is number one. Who do you put as the number two tight end in the division?
You know, it's an interesting question. Noah Fant's not bad. He put up a big season last year catching balls from Drew Lock. Nah, not a huge season. Never mind. I take that back a little bit.
He didn't like his role. He hated his role there. He wants to run down the field.
Just wait until he's in Seattle. Run blocking consistently. You know, and Higbee is a nice player, but he's never really taken the steps to being
over a full season. He had a stretch, right? Was it in 2020 where you're like, oh my gosh, I have Zach Ertz as the number two tight end.
I think that's fair. I mean, when you just look at it from that perspective, Ertz was the second most productive tight end in the division last year, and so you've got, you know, Kittle, who's an all pro, and then Ertz, who's a guy that's a borderline Pro Bowler still.
I go Higbee, Fant after that.
Yeah, I'd probably go Kyle Juszczyk after that. No, I'm just kidding.
It's true. He's a fullback who really is. He's really a tight end. He's a smaller tight end. That's the thing that makes that work, is that he's a fullback, but he does all the tight end things.
So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And then I think I take Fant over Higbee. Higbee is the classic like tight end that plays for a decade and like ends up putting up like 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, and you're like, wow, I didn't really realize he had that good of a career. But like, he was never like, at best, he was always like the third best tight end in his division.
I see him as a Max Williams plus, because I think he does have he's more productive in the passing game. I think he's as capable a blocker. I think, you know, Sean McVay trusts him a lot. He really likes him, and he's come a long way since his post draft interesting comments days. If I remember, there was some questionable things that he said back then. For me, the question for number five, I'm going to be a Cardinals honk here. I'm going to say Max Williams ahead of like Will Disley or Colby Parkinson or Tyler Kroft. Even though he's coming back from the knee injury, he's one of the best tight ends who will put up almost no numbers in terms of the passing game.
Yeah, and you look at so here's the question, you know, and I like that we didn't really give much to Trey McBride yet.
Because
like we did with Kenneth Walker, like it's unfair to the proven commodities, and there are four proven commodities.
Right.
Like there's just four guys that are really good. You know, you look at the depth on these guys, and you look at, you know, like Los Angeles, despite the fact that I think it was Kendall Bland cost a bunch bunch of people a ton of money in the Super Bowl by catching the first touchdown in the Super Bowl. But like, you know, you look at like Kendall Blanton and Bryson Hopkins, you're like, okay, there's really nothing after that, you know. And then you look at San Francisco, and I joked about Kyle Juszczyk. He is kind of the original replacement for George Kittle, but they have a nice guy in Tyler Kroft. Seattle has Will Disley. I mean, let's be honest, Noah Fant and Will Disley should be the best tight end room, but like, we don't know what to expect with Noah Fant catching passes from Geno Smith, and Will Disley just can't stay healthy.
Right. I like the Cardinals, especially because you've got Ertz,
if Max
Williams,
Williams
McBride, can... I right. like the tight end room. It's probably the best tight end room the Cardinals have literally ever had ever.
I literally wrote about the tight end room, and I was like, if Max Williams is healthy, and it's probably not going to be till what, October-ish, that he's like fully back. But like, if Max Williams is healthy, like the tight end position is a strength for the Cardinals.
It's amazing. I because I like the depth behind Ertz more than I like the depth on any other team in the division. Tyler Kroft is a nice player, but I think both Williams and probably Trey McBride are over him. The tight ends after Tyler Higbee are like Blanton and Hopkins. They're just guys who can play tight end around the league. And then like Fant Disley, they're nice. Like, but they have upside. But again, the quarterback situation also affects them.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, Will Disley, I think he was another one. You talked about Higbee, right? Like, didn't he put up a run in like
2018 or something?
2018
like that.
Or 2019, where you're like, dude, this guy is the next dude. And then like all of a sudden, like he got injured, and then he's just never been the same since. Yeah, it was 2019, I want to say. And yeah, like, and you do feel bad for him. Like, these guys go out there and put up these numbers. Yeah, from in 2019, he went 52 touchdowns, 62, one touchdown, 57, one touchdown, 81 yards, and then got hurt on like one of the first plays of a game against Cleveland. And like, it just has never really been the same guy since. Like, because you got to remember, Disley coming out was like a speedy big guy at 6'4", 265, and he just is a shell of himself now. But yeah, so I think the Cardinals are number one, just because, like you said, the drop off between Ertz and McBride and Williams is less so prominent than the drop off from Kittle to Kroft. But that also isn't completely fair because of how freaking good George Kittle is.
Yes, absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise of Seaward podcast, special Cardinals talk. Let's talk about the big guys, the offensive line, the defensive interior. Talk about those positions, those rooms. That's coming up next on Rise of Seaward. We're back on the Rise of Seaward podcast, special Cardinals talk on the web. In terms of individual offensive linemen, let's just talk tackles. And that's it. Trent Williams, clear number one. Guess what? Guess who's number two now on that list?
Yeah.
It's DJ Humphreys. That's because
Andrew Whitworth,
he's gone. Dwayne Brown, gone. So, but here's the thing. Do you think that Charles Cross, as a rookie, is better than Joe Noteboom for the Rams? And how close do you think that Charles Cross is to DJ?
Man, I just struggle with rookies so much. Like, it's just not fair.
It'd be different, like, say, like a tight end for like a Kyle Pitts, who was like last year, who was just what the.
Well, let me ask you this, because it is a fair question to me. Is the gap between Trent Williams, who's the best left tackle in the NFL, and DJ Humphreys further apart than the gap between Humphreys and Cross? Like, that's how I would look at it, and I would go, I don't know. It's so tough.
Trent Williams is that good. He, like the kids like to say, he's him.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so that's the thing. Like, this is a dude you know, that's the new term. Like, he's a dude. And you're like, yeah, he is a guy. What? I don't know what's going on. But yeah. And, but the thing is, like, he's just that freaking good. You know, I'm going to go. Here's the other thing with the note boom thing. And he hasn't been a bad player, but think about who he's got to replace. I mean, think about San Francisco. They lost Joe Staley, and then they went and got
Trent Williams. They actually got better. What?
Right. And they went and got Trent Williams. And, like, the Rams haven't done that. That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so, like, I guess you could give the nod to Cross, because I don't think Note Boom's very good. But, like, I think it's – I also do think it's disrespectful to a guy that's actually done anything in the league already.
Interesting thing when you talk about the offensive lines as a unit. Only the Cardinals really have no questions. You could say, like, with Rodney Hudson coming back, there is – one newcomer, and that's Will Hernandez. And after what we saw from Max Garcia down the stretch, even though Will Hernandez was arguably not great in New York, I don't think there's anyone who would say that Will Hernandez is not better than Max Garcia. So the Cardinals improved at a position that they replaced. They stay at least even across the rest of the line. The rest of the division each has at least, I think, two major question marks because they have at least two new starters on their lines. So San Francisco, they have to replace their left guard. Laken Tomlinson left, quality player, and Austin, and then Alex Mack retired as well. So they have a new left guard and a new center. Seattle's a mess because they have two new tackles. They have a new center, and they have three starters that they're replacing. And the Rams, they're replacing two starters. Well, one of the starters they're replacing is changing positions. And so,
yeah. And can I say something real quick? I don't even know who Kyle Fuller. I didn't know there was a Kyle Fuller that was a center.
He was on the Austin Blythe is going to be their starter.
Oh, okay.
Austin Blythe is going to be sorry. Kyle Fuller was on their team last year, but no. Austin Blythe is expected to be the starter, and then I think tackle. I think they're anticipating both the rookies Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas will probably be their two starters.
That's insane.
Two rookie tackles. Good luck. Good luck, Gino.
And Gabe Jackson's a slug, and Damian Lewis isn't much better from an athleticism standpoint.
Right. Damian Lewis is their best offensive lineman right now.
Yeah, like that's bizarre, man. Like, what are they doing? Oh man, so, I want to change my vote on where Rashad Penny falls.
Oh, true. Then forget about that terrible one.
So is McKivitz and Brendel the guys?
Brendel's the guy that's expected to start at center, and it'll be McKivitz or School, I think.
What happened to Banks? Is he that
No. It is going to be Banks. Banks is expected. Okay. Banks is expected to start at left guard. That's the guy. It's Banks. So they're counting on their second year guy out of Notre Dame, Aaron Banks, to take over for Laken Tomlinson. But that is two positions. You've got left tackle is taken care of. Mike McGlinchey, who's a solid right tackle. Not great, but definitely.
He's a good player.
Right. The right tackles in the division outside of Seattle, you've got solid right tackles. You've got Mike McGlinchey. You've got
Rob Havenstein.
You've got Rob Havenstein. You've got Kelvin Beachum. Those are all very solid. The right tackle position is solid.
I'm just glad I don't have to learn who these guys are for the Seahawks. Because I know who Austin Blythe and then the two rookies are. But, like, this, I don't know who Jake Curhan is either. Like, exactly. I thought ESPN was just messing with me.
So, the question is, Seattle, disaster. Do you put San Francisco or L.A. ahead of one another on the offensive line? And that's that's a major question for the Rams this year. It's going to be interesting to see what happens without Whitworth.
Yeah, I still go San Francisco just because, like you said, they've got the best player on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. So, Yeah.
Let's talk about the defensive interior, the defensive tackles, not the edge guys, but the defensive tackles. Obviously, Aaron Donald is number one. You've got some decent names after that. Okay, you've got Greg Gaines, also in L.A., Sean Robinson, also in L.A., Eric Armstead for the 49ers. I don't think we're going to consider Javon Kinlaw yet in the number two. And then the Seattle defensive line is suspect. You've got J.J. Watt and Zach Allen for the Cardinals. You do have Shelby Harris in Seattle, which is a quality defensive tackle. After Aaron Donald, who do you give the number two to?
I think it's Eric Armstead. I think J.J. probably could be if he would have been healthy for longer. But Armstead has been just such a force for them and has been such an there for them. Like, I think it again, like a pure talent standpoint, JJ's probably gonna, you know, if he plays 17 games, he's probably gonna beat 6 sacks and 7 tackles for loss. But we can't put him there right now just because we just don't know how many games he can play. I mean, you look at what Watt did last year for the Cardinals, and it's crazy to look at it, right? So he had just the 1 sack, but he had 5 tackles for loss in 7 games. And you look at Eric Armstead playing all 17 games, and he had 6 sacks and 7 tackles for loss. You're like, I thought this dude was, like, more impactful. But it's been a couple years since he's put up those, like, massive numbers.
Those massive numbers actually came from the edge.
Yeah. And so that's what you look at, man. Like, it's just crazy because it's what makes Aaron Donald so special, right? This dude just performs and puts up literally all pro numbers every season. And, you know, he was legitimately thinking about retirement because, you know, he is 31.
There's nothing left for him to accomplish.
Right. And he is, you know, when you talk about being the dude or like that, you know, he's him. Like this guy puts so much effort into what he does. You look at it. I mean, he probably wants to get to 100 sacks. He'll get that quickly. He's literally been an all-pro every year except his rookie year, where all he did as a rookie was have 9 sacks and 18 tackles for loss and 1 defensive rookie of the year. But yeah, like literally, like you look at him, he's just built differently. But he's 31 now. You know, but the way he trains is just so different than everybody else, man. Yeah. Like, it's just insane. So you got Aaron Donald, then you go probably Eric Armstead, then you probably go J.J. Watt. I mean, I'm looking up Shelby Harris's numbers. He's playing in a new defense now. Let's see. So last year, he did have 6 sacks last year. Again, but look at these guys, like all of these guys. Like, obviously, we talked about Aaron Donald.
Greg Gaines is a very solid player.
Right. We talked about how Aaron Donald's a freak, but like all these guys are getting close to, like, they're either 30 or above. Like, it's a veteran led defensive line depth chart. You know, Ashawn's really not a pass rushing type. He's a run stopper. He's a guy I've said for a long time that I thought would be a perfect fit in Arizona. Mm-hmm. You know, just to be a guy that can help stop the run. So you go Donald, Armstead, Watt. Would you go Harris or would you go with Gaines or Robinson? It's just so tough. Like, once you get past the top one, you're just nitpicking at this point.
I think I would go Gaines, Harris, but I'd even throw in Zach Allen in that mix too.
Yeah, but Allen's got the same issue. Like, I just want to see him play a full season. Yeah.
Last year, but then, even last year when he played the full season, he played without an ankle ligament. His ankle put together. It was just tape. And still, it's still a matter. You saw him run for that touchdown on that fumble recovery, right?
Right.
On no ankle.
Right. And you look at him, like, he's a guy, he's only 24. Like, he's still got so much time. He'll be 25 in a month. But, you know, he's got so much time to develop still. Like, it would be really nice if he took that step, man, and just became a guy that they could reliably trust and didn't have to lean on a full season of
Watt and Allen. I love the Cardinals defensive line. Now, I said, as a unit, I don't think there's any question that the Rams defensive line, their defensive front, their inside guys, are by far the best, because all, now granted, they play with three up front. You've got Aaron Donald, Greg Gaines, and A'shaun Robinson. All of them are two, like, Aaron Donald, the GOAT. Greg Gaines, very good, and A'shaun Robinson, very solid. And you have questions on all the other teams, because you've got the question of Javon Kinlaw for the 49ers next to Eric Armstead. For the Cardinals, you've got the durability factor of Watt and Allen, and what it looks like it's going to be Rashard Lawrence in the middle. I will say, Loke, if they can get a full season of Rashard Lawrence, that is one player that the coaching staff quietly loves. They really, really like Rashard Lawrence. The problem is he's had lower leg injuries. What is it, each of the last 3 years, including college?
Right. Like, he's just a guy that just can't physically stay healthy.
And then in Seattle, you got Seattle with...
I don't mind Quentin Jefferson.
They're fine. Quentin Jefferson, Puna Ford, they're not bad, but like I still think that if you're looking at ranking the four, you go Rams, Cardinals, 49ers, Seahawks in terms of their defensive interior.
Yeah, because Kinlaw hasn't done anything yet. Yeah, you're probably right. Like, you're twisting my arm a little bit. Like, I want to like the interior of San Francisco more, but I got to see
edge
Kinlaw.
It's their edge and their linebackers that really.
Well, but I also need to see Kinlaw perform before.
Right, that's it. Kinlaw just his paper knees.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's fair.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the left. Let's move to the next phase of the defense, the edge and the linebacking core. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seaward. We're back on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the left. We've got some pass rushers. We're talking about the edge. Would you say that the number one pass rusher, edge defender in the division would be Nick Bosa?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, like, as a pure edge guy, I would still say Aaron Donald, but yeah, I think it's Bosa. Number one.
So who's next? Do you do Leonard Floyd or Marcus Golden?
God, probably Floyd, but man, that's tough. 9.5 sacks last year. You know, but he also has a way easier job, right? Like, let's be honest.
Because then you've got, at the other position, you're going with Seattle. You've got Darrell Taylor, who hasn't done a whole lot. And they added Uchenna Nwosu.
That'll be an interesting signing because, you know, he's been a guy that everybody's waiting to break out.
Yeah.
He's still really young too, dude. It's crazy. He's only going to be 26 at the end of this season.
Kerry Hyder back in San Francisco, was really good in San Francisco as a couple of years ago, went to Seattle, now returns since D Ford's list is start. They're going to cut him. And then they drafted Drake Jackson.
What, you don't want to pay that much money for three sacks?
and then the Cardinals, after Marcus Golden, are a amalgam of questions.
Right, a problem.
Like, now the question is, can, like, in terms of the Cardinals, if you look at, so Chandler Jones played most of the time. So he had 10 and a half sacks last year. You know, granted, he only had 5.5 after week one. Can you get a combined 10 sacks from Devon Kennard, Dennis Gardeck, and the rookies, Cameron Smith / Myjai Sanders? Do you think you can get 10 sacks out of those four guys combined?
It's such a fair question.
Now, I will say this. I loved Cameron Smith. I think he's going to be really good.
Cameron Thomas.
Cameron Smith, who the heck? Cameron Thomas, because...
I was wondering who that was. I was like, did we sign somebody?
Here's the thing about... Because Thomas has length, he has athleticism, and he has motor. You can't go wrong with that. So in terms of, as long as he knows his assignment, I think he will be Marcus Golden-like at least.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, and you look at it, I think Thomas and Sanders can probably give you 8 combined. I really do. So that just means, do you get
3 sacks combined out of Kennard and DeGardeck?
Well, and like, even more than that, are you going to get closer to, like,
okay,
I don't
out
think,
of those what, 4, maybe you want 12 to 14.
But that's what I was going to say. I don't think you're ever going to get the Gardeck production that we saw in that unreal year before he blew his knee. But, you know, I think you can expect between the 4 of them, I think 14 would be realistic. I think that's probably where you want to shoot for if you're going to have good production. If you can get 10 from Golden and you get 14 from the other guys, that's 24. And then you just need, like we talked about, Allen and Watt to stay healthy and produce together. Like, I think that's a realistic expectation for those guys.
The edge, like every team in the division has question marks, at least at one side. Who do you like? Whose edge combo do you like best? Do you like Bosa with Drake Jackson / Kerry Hyder? The Cardinals with Marcus Golden and a committee? Seattle with Daryl Taylor and Uchenna Nwosu? Or the Rams with Leonard Floyd and Justin Hollins?
So I think San Francisco's kind of in the same boat as the Rams, right? Like, they're number one because they have the alpha of the group.
Right.
You know, it's going to be interesting. I'm probably going to piss people off, but I'm going to go with Seattle at 2. And that's because Taylor had 6.5 sacks last year. I think he's going to continue to grow. And then they brought in Nwosu.
Like, they have the strongest 2. So they
right.
Their second like, guy is the
Their the pass rushing situation.
The second guy.
Right. Their pass rushing situation is very similar to their quarterback situation, and that they have 2 guys that would be great as your number 2. Oh, man. I prefer Floyd over Golden, but golly, I do not like the names on this roster. So you've got Floyd and you've got Hollins, and then Terrell Lewis wasn't.
Terrell Lewis has done jiggly squats so far.
Yeah, and then you've got Chris Garrett. Like, I don't even know who some of these guys are.
And Daniel Hardy is a 7th-round rook. Like, Daniel Hardy is a dude I love 3 years from now.
Right. I would go just pure edge. I would go San Francisco, Seattle, Arizona, L.A. Just looking at their names, they're so bad. But that's the thing. Like, people are going to be like, well, they have Aaron Donald. Yeah, right. The best defense is the Rams because they have the best defensive player. Duh. It's not hard.
All right. Looking at the linebackers, the inside guys. Fred Warner, I think, would you say Fred Warner is clear numero uno?
You know, I'm really interested to see Wagner this year, but in L.A., but yeah, I would say Warner's 1, and then I would give Wagner the Albert Pujols in the home run derby.
It's number 2.
Right. Like, I'm gonna let him be number 2. Three. Would you go Simmons or Brooks?
Do you do Simmons, Brooks, or even do you Ernest Jones, who played down the stretch for the Rams?
Yeah.
Really well.
Oh, man. I think.
Oh. I like Simmons because of his. I like what Simmons can do across the board more than I like Brooks.
Yeah, I would probably go Simmons, Brooks, Jones.
But if you're talking.
Where does Dre Greenlaw fit in there, though? Because he's not a bad player either.
That's
like,
true.
Would you.
You know, would I put Dre ahead of Isaiah right now? Yeah, probably.
This is tough. I mean, you know, we're spitballing, obviously, but like the best linebacker group maybe in the NFL is the 49ers. Like even Azeez Al-Shaair is a
he's not bad.
He's a good ball player. I think, like you said, two would probably be the Rams. Obviously, we want to see what Wagner has left, but I think
here's the thing. That defensive line is going to keep him so clean.
Right. And like you said, the way Ernest Jones played down the stretch and like came on late, he gives you, it's like the opposite situation of their pass rushers opposite Leonard Floyd. Right. Like you're like, oh, this gives you hope for this guy. Whereas, you know, the other guys, you're like, this guy sucks. So
those linebackers aren't bad. Cody Barton's fine.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. I don't. You can pronounce that other name.
I don't even know who he is. So you know, I'm gonna take a lead. Like Brooks and Barton as a duo is more proven than Simmons and Collins.
100%. I mean, it is. It's just. I mean, it's undeniably true. Now, if you want to say that you think that Simmons and Collins will be better, I mean, I would hope so, because I think, as we talked about, they'll be playing in front of or behind better line play. But I mean, it's not a number one with a bullet type thing.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Cigarette Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to the final stage or the final back level of the defense. We'll talk defensive backs and then throw in position the specialists and coaches as well. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Special Cardinals Talk on the web. We're talking about the cornerbacks first. I think you have to say the number one cornerback, of course, is Jalen Ramsey. The cornerback play in the division now, a little bit more questionable. After so this is what we got across the board. So you've got for the 49ers, you've got Tre'Varius Ward, Emmanuel Moseley, and Jason Verrett as their top three. And we're not ranking the player, but just kind of listing them. For the Seahawks, they've got Trey Brown, Sidney Jones, and Justin Coleman is probably the guy that's going to be in the slot. The Cardinals, you've got Marco Wilson, Byron Murphy, and a big question mark right now, either Josh Jones or Antonio Hamilton. And then you go to the Rams with Jalen Ramsey. You go Jalen Ramsey, Troy Hill returns, and then David Long, who actually played really well in the slot after the Cardinals' first game against him. Who's your number two corner after Ramsey? If you're ranking 1 through 5, we could just say definitely Ramsey number one. Who's your 2 through 5?
Would you go with Ward number two?
I would.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
I would do Ward, then Hill.
Troy Hill.
Then
probably Murph.
Yeah, and then I think even still, I'm going to put Marco at number 5 over Trey Brown.
Did Emmanuel Moseley play last year?
He did.
He wasn't very good, right?
Like he's been good and bad, but I think Marco, I like Marco. Maybe I'm just being, you know, home.
Man, that's tough. Yeah.
The quality of cornerback, definitely taken a dip in the division overall.
Yeah, so Ramsey, Ward, Hill, Murphy, and that's really a coin flip. I mean, you can make an argument for everybody at that point. Like you said, Marco's got the upside, and he had, before the injury, he played well. Trey Brown wasn't bad last year by any stretch of the imagination. But you wonder what he's going to be able to do with the guys in front of him not really doing much. I mean, he only started 11 games last year. That's so tough. Yeah. I think you can put Wilson there. I think it's one of those kind of like the receiver thing. Like, you're waiting for somebody to show you that they're the fifth best. And we're trying to figure out. And so since we're the most comfortable and we watch Wilson the most, we're like, this is probably the guy I'm most comfortable calling the fifth best, even though, you know, we're not confident in it, but like, I think we can make an argument for it.
Now the cornerback rooms, if you're talking about trios of cornerbacks, I still think the Rams go. I'm obviously Rams is number one, but I do like Troy Hill a lot. And David Long played really well last year in the slot. So yeah, I think they've got three very solid options at cornerback.
Yeah, I would go Rams. I would probably go 49ers next, just because you know what
Brett's
you're getting.
Good. If he's healthy, he's good.
And then I would probably, I mean, it's so tough to put the Cardinals there because after Murphy and Wilson, it's like.
But it's I think the Murphy Wilson is so much stronger than
Brown, Sidney Jones.
Yes. Even though I think they're number three in Justin and Justin Coleman does.
Isn't bad, yeah.
But if Josh Jackson, so it might, and it might end up being Robert Alford who's back. And so if you've got Rob Alford as your third cornerback, you like that room. If Josh Jackson can be the guy who can be in that Rob Alford role where Murph slides inside and then you get Jackson on the boundary, if he can be that guy, okay. But right now it's seriously, cornerback three is a huge question mark because it looks like it's Antonio Hamilton. And right. the unfortunate thing is that means Murph is not playing inside this year as it stands.
Yeah, and it's funny because you talk about like how far the corner talent has fallen, and in that same time the safety talent's just gone through the roof.
Oh yes. that's so I think we will say this. I don't know if we will get agreements, but being Cardinals fans, we have to say that Buda Baker is the best safety in the division, right? We have to.
Yeah, I've never been a huge Jamal Adams guy.
Oh, and Quandre Diggs. I think he's better than Jamal at this point.
Diggs is good. I really liked what Jordan Fuller did last year.
Very
I thought he
good.
Was excellent.
Jalen Thompson's really good.
Yeah, and then Jimmy Ward's really, really good.
They acquired George Odom. He's good. Travarius Moore is actually kind of probably their starter. He'll be a major player this year. And had he been healthy, it wouldn't have been Jabquesky Tartt on the field at the time. So,
so yeah, Odom's interesting. You know, he was in Indy. He was a first team all pro in 2020. He's a good ball player, man. But you know, that first team all pro was for special teams.
True.
And so last year was his biggest year, only 43% of the snaps on defense. Like, he's a good ball player. Like, I'm not gonna take anything away from him, but like,
Do you say Jalen Thompson or Jamal Adams?
I might go Fuller, Thompson, Adams.
Yeah, fair. And Jimmy Ward, he's good. Like, he's so versatile, but he's not great.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Ward too. That's... God, the safeties in this like, they're so much better than the other positions.
So, safety duos. this is another tough one because you've got Buddha and JT here. You've got Diggs and Adams in Seattle. Now, I should say Diggs and Adams should be the best.
Well, yeah, whatever they paid for Adams was stupid at the time.
But Adams, for some reason, just doesn't make sense, and then you can't play that defense. You got Boudin, JT. You've got Diggs and Adams. You've got Odom and Ward. And then you've got also Taylor Rapp, Jordan Fuller. It's great. Great pairs of safeties.
Yeah, I'm going to go Cardinals, Seahawks, Rams, 49ers.
But they're all really close. 1 through 4, I'd agree with that, but 1 through 4 is not separated by very much.
No, I think it's all really close. Yeah, I think that's the way you got to do it. I'm trying to think if I would change anything. It depends on what happens with Moore, if he becomes a guy, or if like Hufanga becomes a good guy for San Francisco. I mean Taylor Rapp has owned the Cardinals, so maybe it's just that. But like I think he's probably like the seventh best guy or eighth best guy.
But man, he owns Kyler.
Yeah, he does.
The specialists. Okay. Who's the kicker you would take first? So you've got Prater, Jason Myers, Robbie Gould, and Matt Gay.
I'm probably taking Prater in that case.
Okay.
That's Prater a tough Gould. One.
Prater, Gould, Myers, Gay.
Yeah, probably.
Punter, Andy Lee, Wisnowski for San Francisco, Michael Dixon, and now Riley Dixon for the they cut Johnny Hecker. It's got to be Dixon, right? Or is it Wisnowski?
No, I think it's Dixon, Wisnowski, Lee, and then whatever happens in L.A.
Coaches.
Oh, man.
you know, Pete Carroll
so,
has...
This is long snappers first, so I don't...
Like we shouldn't know anything about the long snappers because no one's ever supposed to know about the long snappers.
Exactly.
That said, the coaches now, it's interesting because Cliff has improved and Pete Carroll, what is he doing?
Not. Yeah.
Like he was getting legacy status, but that legacy status is wearing out. So McVay's got to be the top, right?
Yeah, McVay, probably Shanahan because he went further in the playoffs. And then I go.
This year is the big year for Shanahan. 8-28. 8-28 without Jimmy Garoppolo starting.
Yeah, I'd probably go Cliff Carroll at this point.
Basically, we're saying that Carroll has lost touch with the NFL.
Right. Today. When you run out of town a Hall of Fame quarterback.
And say Geno Smith's your guy.
Yeah, golly, and this is like 3 years ago that he was still number one with a bullet.
That's basically it. We feel that Pete Carroll has basically lost his grasp on today's NFL. Like the league has passed him by. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. I can go with that. McVay clearly he won a Super Bowl. He's been to two Super Bowls, won one. Shanahan comes to go into the NFC title game, but this is a big year for Shanahan because he hasn't had success with anyone other than Jimmy Garoppolo. And Cliff Kingsbury has ascended yearly, but we've got the question about the ends of the seasons. But all three of these young coaches, they are right on pace with what the NFL is, while the league has seemed to have passed Carroll by.
Yeah. And I think that, and you know, we'll see how it goes, man. But yeah, I do think it's that way. Been nice if the Rams would have lost everybody to retirement.
Right.
Whatever.
Right. Yeah, that would have been ideal, though. Losing Von Miller, so they have more questions than you might think, because they did lose one very good cornerback from last year. They lose their left tackle. They do add Bobby Wagner, and so they have a legitimate star at every level of the defense. But they lose Odell for now. Robert Woods is gone. They add Allen Robinson. We'll see what he's got. But if I'm looking at the division, though, obviously the Rams are the class of the division. They're the creme de la creme. They're the top again. And I am not, like, I know betting-wise, the 49ers, I still think the Cardinals are better than the 49ers because I don't believe yet in Trey Lance.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%.
I think they're going to miss the playoffs. I think they're going to be a 9-win team this year.
It's baffling to me that they have to make this move, but they have to make this
move. They do. They literally do. And I think this, if you're looking at the rosters across the board, Rams, Cardinals, 49ers, and then Seattle by far is the worst team. But that doesn't mean they're going to be significantly worse in the standings, because I still think they might. They win. I think they're good enough to win 6 games still, because of the type of the division. But maybe not. You know, you still got a DK. If you're okay, and I think defensively they might have gotten better. Well, they're tough. Looking as I was doing the previews, I think the 4 favorites to win the division are the division winners of last year. And it comes down to 5 teams vying for the wild card. I think it's going to be the Cardinals, the 49ers, the Vikings, the Saints, and the Eagles. Although I think the Eagles have an okay chance of overtaking the Cowboys. But if you look at those 5 teams, I like the Cardinals, Eagles best. And then I'm thinking of all those 5 teams, I would put the 49ers as the least likely of those 5 to be a wild card team this year.
Yeah.
Between the Saints and the Vikings, the Saints have, the defense is really good. And Winston, if he comes back healthy, he's definitely solid. And they still have their offense. Their offensive weapons are great. Minnesota, with the new head coach, I think they're probably right on par. But Kirk Cousins, you know, you have to think he's going to be better than Trey Lance. And so while the 49ers roster talent around Lance is better, you're going to need Lance to look good. He's going to have to be – he can't be bad. And he needs to have
this team take a step back, which it feels like is going to happen.
Right. And if he is above average, I think the 49ers are good. But I don't know how you can expect Trey Lance to be above average this year. We saw what Patrick Mahomes did in year one and in year two when he sat for his rookie season. But guess what? Trey Lance is not on the same stratosphere in terms of quarterback talent, especially where the lack of experience that he got. Patrick Mahomes started a gazillion games. Trey Lance did not.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously, if you and I are wrong, we'll fess up to it. It's interesting.
And nobody will remember this show in 5 months from now.
Don't worry, I'll remind myself. I'll be like, see, I told you that Trey Lance guy. We should both put sound bites out that it's like Trey Lance is the next Patrick Mahomes, and then just like splice that somewhere and then nobody will go back and actually listen to the whole thing. So
so with that wraps up this edition of the Rise of Spirit podcast, the first one with Seth back in a couple of months, but we're back to regular shows. We will do our training camp preview next week on Tuesday night after the Cardinals report. They'll have their run test that day, and then that Saturday will be the first public practice. Basically back to weekly shows between now and the middle of January, hopefully February, honestly. Have to win the Super Bowl. All right, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rule. We'll be back again next week, guys. Thank you, as always, for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast.
Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Whoa!